You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on Thursday, June 22nd. It's also a great pleasure to be joined by two distinguished journalists here in our virtual newsroom. Chris Mays is a reporter and writer with Vermont News and Media, covers the Brattleboro area. Much of his work appears in the Brattleboro Reformer, but also his byline has been seen in the Manchester Journal and the Bennington Banner. So, Chris, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
And also, we're very pleased to be joined by Kevin O'Connor, who is a reporter with the VT Digger. Kevin also covers the Brattleboro area, Windham County, southeastern Vermont, and really a great pleasure to have you with us today, Kevin. Thank you very much for joining us today. And I thought let's start with you. You've written a couple of stories that have appeared in Digger this week on that issue around the emergency rescue services over in Brattleboro. Some of our viewers will probably remember that it was about a little over a year ago, I think April of 2022, when the town of Brattleboro kind of, I guess unexpectedly, might that be the right term, decided to sever its relationship with Rescue, a nonprofit rescue service, emergency rescue service, and opted to try out a different approach. I wonder if you could kind of bring us up to speed on what the background is here and kind of where things are at right now, because there were a couple of developments that came up, I think, this week.
Sure, and I'll try to give you the 25-word or less version.
Good luck.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a year ago that the Brattleboro Select Board decided that to drop its nearly 60-year contract with the private nonprofit Rescue Incorporated and instead study the possibility of taking over EMS through its fire department. That study has been continuing on. This summer, they're doing a series of meetings to sort of look at cost and operating models and different information like that. I think what's been coming out this summer is the projections that were used a year ago when the board actually decided to take this step, which were provided by the former town manager who has since left, are different now once they're revised by the new town manager and his staff in the municipal center. And I think that's raising some eyebrows because the feeling was a year ago, oh, the town could take this over, perhaps even save money in terms of how much they were spending with Rescue and make a lot of money in terms of insurance reimbursements for ambulance service. I think a year later, doing the homework, they've been recognizing that you don't make money on EMS. And the question now is, how much is this going to cost if they decide to go through it? So there have been a series of meetings this summer. There was one as recently as Tuesday. There'll be another in July and August on the issue. But I think what was hopeful a year ago, or what was promised a year ago, in terms of something that could actually not only save money, but perhaps make money for the municipality, is now sort of coming under scrutiny and seen as perhaps more of a challenge and perhaps even a liability.
Chris, I guess I just wonder, are you sort of seeing the same thing on your beat? I know you cover a lot of the towns around around Brattleboro. Are some of the conversations happening in some of those towns similar to the situation in Brattleboro?
Not exactly. The one thing, and this is something that one of Kevin's articles raised this week, the staffing is going to be a big issue, you know, a lot of fire departments, they are volunteer departments, but they struggle to find people, but businesses and nonprofits struggle to find the people to do these jobs. So that's something that's coming up in Brattleboro, but it's also all over the place. Maybe, and it's not exactly just Vermont either. It's nationally. In Brattleboro, you know, the costs are coming in, you know, between $1 million to $2 million in just the startup costs. And we're going to be looking at the operating costs and models at an upcoming meeting. And at the same time, they're looking for, they just issued a request for information from ambulance providers to see, you know, what kind of other partnerships they could have. Right now they're working with Golden Cross Ambulance, but they're going to put feelers out to see who else might be interested in working with them. That request for information is going to be used to help draft a request for proposals. So it'll be interesting to see if Rescue Inc. comes back to the table, or if maybe they're too busy now, because they're actually now working in the Keene, New Hampshire area. They got a contract over there. But they're headquartered in Brattleboro. So we'll see what happens.
I think what's interesting about this story is, on one hand, it's a Brattleboro politics story, but more on a statewide level, it is this challenge. How do you provide emergency medical care? There seem to be two models. Some of the larger communities, those of 5,000 or more people, have municipal systems, whether through the fire department or through a separate EMS facility. But a lot of the smaller towns, which is the majority of Vermont, I didn't realize this, but out of the 247 cities and towns in Vermont, only 28 of them have 5,000 or more people. So that means that more than 200 of Vermont's cities and towns are 5,000 or less. A lot of those are provided, get their ambulance service from regional facilities. But whether you're a regional or you're a municipal, if you're a volunteer, it's hard because people just have less time to volunteer. And if you're a paid system, it's challenging because you can often make more money in a larger area. So especially with towns such as Massachusetts, New York, and New Hampshire bordering us, we're competing not only against each other, but we're competing against those towns for paid service, workers. So it's just becoming more and more of a challenge of it's a necessary service, but there are fewer people who either are volunteering to provide it or who are willing to work for the wages that Vermont can afford to offer. And so then how do you continue to provide something that is critical?
Well, it was an issue over here in Manchester last year. There was a similar discussion, interesting parallels. It struck me around that, whether or not Manchester should spin off and have its own rescue service as opposed to a five-town regional one that currently serves the town. So clearly an issue that many, many communities will be grappling with across the state. But let's move on from there. And I'd like to hear from both of you what you're seeing about another major issue in the state. That's the one involving the homeless motel program. It's become an increasingly complicated story, it seems like to me. But as many people know, a lot of folks who were unable to live in their own places were able to have rooms in hotels and motels around the state. That program was going to end. It was being funded by federal dollars from the pandemic era relief funds. And that program was going to come to an end, well, in stages, I guess. June 1st was one and July 1st was another. And just this week, the legislature, when it met in Montpelier for the veto override session, put money back into the budget to extend the program a little bit longer. That's a very short version of that entire saga, but I guess the bottom line is that program is now going to be extended on into April, at least for folks who are still in the motels. But I guess I was just wondering to you both, what are you both seeing over in Brattleboro on the homeless situation? I mean, there's been a lot of concern that folks who have been who would have been evicted and have been already been evicted from some of the motels would be having to stay in tents or be out on the streets. What's it looking like over in Brattleboro? Well, Chris, I'll let you start us on this one.
Yeah, town officials and social service agencies formed a crisis response team when this was all happening, and they've tried to, you know, form a response to this whole thing. And they, before we learned that they were going to extend the program, they submitted requests to the state to open an emergency shelter in one of the big empty buildings in Brattleboro. And if that didn't come to fruition, to allow dispersed camping on state lands and provide transportation for people, the state had requested proposals from communities in the wake of all this, the motel program wind down. I know it's caused a lot of worries and concerns, and there's been a lot of worry for these people as they're leaving their housing.
I think one of the challenge with it is before the motel program, there was always a homeless population, but it wasn't to the extent that it is now. I think the motel program actually brought a lot of people out who weren't necessarily coming out to report themselves as homeless. Once the, you know, the benefit of the pandemic, if you could say there was one, was the services provided in terms of the motels allowed more people to come forward and say, yeah, I need housing, and then to receive housing. The challenge now is the system pre-pandemic was built to work with a certain number of people. Now suddenly it's been discovered, like, wow, we thought that we had 1,500 homeless people in Vermont. Actually, it's more like 3,000. So the system pre-pandemic was built to accommodate what they thought was the numbers. The challenge now with the motels, or some of the motel vouchers stopping, is you have more people coming out than you have available services for. And so I think that's one of the challenges. The other challenge is a lot of people had gotten very good, unfortunately, of knowing if you were homeless, you had a sort of a system in terms of, do I camp in the summer? Do I couch surf in the winter? You've now spent, you know, if you're a person who's had the ability to stay in one place for 2 or 3 years, you're now sort of coming back out into the world realizing, oh, you know, I have to sort of figure this all out again. And I think that's one of the things that there's a lot of frustration from the people who are getting out of the motels, or who were lost their vouchers in June 1st, was they don't have a lot of practice with this like they used to. And it's unfortunate that you need to have practice to figure out, where are you going to camp? Where are you going to outsurf? How are you going to figure this thing out? So I think both the people who are now without housing, and likewise the people who work with them, are all feeling sort of overwhelmed because it's a much different world than it was in 2019.
One of the things that's puzzled me a great deal about this whole situation is, I mean, the mantra right from the start was, these are federal dollars, this is one-time money, we're not going to be able to run this forever. And yet it seems like as we entered 2023 and the deadlines began to get closer, my perception anyway has been that there wasn't a whole lot of planning as to what was supposed to happen when these folks were going to be having to leave the motels, either on June 1st or July 1st. Is that, well, where are they going to go? What's going to happen to them? I just wondered, is it your sense that these people just sort of figure it out by themselves, or what was supposed to happen?
I think one of the challenges with this is there are organizations that do work on these issues, but again, they were used to working with a certain number of people. And then suddenly, as the pandemic increased, they suddenly realized, we're equipped to work with 100, and now we're working with 300. So I think these organizations have continued to do their work. There's a gentleman by the name of Angus Cheney who used to work at the state level on this and now works for the Rutland program. And as he said, one of the things that's frustrating as someone actually in the field is people don't see the seven people that he houses. They simply see the three people that they couldn't find the housing for. So that isn't to say that we don't need to do more. But it is, you don't see the people that the services are helping. You're only seeing the ones that they're not. So it sort of can at times offer a skewed perception in terms of what's going on. I think the other challenge with this whole issue is affordable housing is hard to find for anybody, for someone coming into the region with a new job. We've got many refugees from Afghanistan coming in, as well as the homeless. So suddenly, the pandemic brought a lot of people who were coming in and buying homes from other places, which were also taking up issues. So it's not just sort of one thing. It's like you've got, in a funny way, it's like you've got the homeless advocates standing on the beach, and then they're being told, now just, you know, hold off the tsunami here. And there's a certain point where it just, it's so overwhelming. So I do think that they're trying, but I just think that the numbers are, you know, increased so much so quickly that any work that they are doing to get people in isn't being seen, because you're just seeing the people that aren't getting in.
Yeah, to Kevin's point, there was a, in that request to the state, they were thinking that an outside contractor would be needed to run the shelter because of how strapped our local provider is. You know, they weren't saying, oh, we'll run this shelter. They said, we need somebody to come from the outside and run this shelter. And to talk about, you know, some of the thoughts about winding down the program, I talked to some legislators who were very heartfelt in saying, we can't afford to do this program anymore. You know, it's so expensive, but we created all these programs. We have all these funds to increase housing. But as it came to happen, it became a real crisis, I think. And when we saw it unfold, I think there was sort of a moment where people said, hey, we need to regroup on this.
I noticed yesterday, I live in downtown Brattleboro, and I noticed yesterday there are several waves that were supposed to happen in terms of people leaving motels. The first wave did happen on June 1st. There is a second wave, July 1st, that is not going to happen because of what the legislature did. Those people are a little bit more vulnerable in terms of being older, perhaps with children, medical issues. But the group that did lose their vouchers on June 1st is now back out in the community. And their challenge right now is they don't really know where to go. So a lot of them are congregating downtown because it's sort of a central place. You can see others and sort of, you know, but I think that's one of the challenges. In fact, Chris and I both covered a select board meeting on Tuesday night where a couple of the homeless people came forward, or people who are homeless came forward and said, quite frankly, you keep telling us where we can't be. Could someone please tell us where we can be? You know, and I think it was a legitimate question for the community. There's one thing about sort of saying we don't want you downtown, or we don't want you where we don't want you. The community, I think, is really starting to recognize one of the questions is, if we're not putting, or if we're not offering motel vouchers, then what can we do? What can we offer in the meantime? And I don't have the answer for that, and I don't think the community does either.
Well, much we could probably spend the entire program talking about this very complicated issue here, but let me just move on here to another story that happened in Brattleboro fairly recently, and that's, I guess, a decision on the part of the town to try and hire a private security firm to help bolster a presence, law enforcement presence in downtown. Your downtown area. I guess I just wanted you to tell us a little bit about that. Is that become a serious problem? And is Brattleboro, much like I guess many other police departments around the state, struggling to recruit enough officers to cover their territory? Is that the case? And Chris, maybe let me go to you on this one.
Yeah, it has been an issue for years now, and the security guard program is meant to be a pilot project, they hope, you know, because they have some people in the pipeline going through the Vermont Police Academy, and there are signs of hope in having that full roster of police officers, but they haven't been able to respond to everything the way that they want to or would like to. And so they are seeing this as a partnership. You know, these guys would be unarmed, but they would be able to report something to the police if necessary. It's one of the problem areas, I guess you would say, is the transportation center. There's been some issues there, and it all came to a head when somebody was held up by knife point and their car was stolen. That was really the breaking point, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Part of the problem, Andrew, is Brattleboro has the capacity to have 27 police officers. They budget for 27 police officers. But because of the challenges with hiring, they only right now have 17. So they only have two-thirds of what they normally would have and have budgeted for. It's not simply a Brattleboro issue. Again, it's another statewide and national issue. They're just more demand than supply. So I think that's one of the ideas in terms of turning to private security is when you physically can't staff the department the way you used to, then what other methods are there to do? And that's why they're trying this.
Sure. Well, you guys have had a busy news week. There are so many stories coming out of Brattleboro this week, and I'm going to rush to get to as many as we can here before we have time. But one of the ones that certainly caught my attention was Brattleboro Union High School, I guess, has retired the Colonel. Colonel used to be the mascot or the name of the teams. I'll show my age here. And thinking back to my time in high school at Mount Anthony Union in Bennington, I remember we used to enjoy seeing the Colonels come to Bennington. So the new name of the team is now what? The Bears? Is that what it's going to be?
Yeah.
I guess what's the logic here? Was the Colonels were considered to be what, some kind of?
Well, I'll take this one since I actually did graduate from Brattleboro Union High School. That's not a slam against Chris.
No, I was hoping you would take the lead on this because you actually, you know, experienced some
he
of the
lived
things
it.
They talked about. You know,
what's interesting about it was. The high school that is currently here in Brattleboro was built in 1950 on the former Civil War mustering grounds, training grounds. And so when the school opened, they decided that they wanted to have some kind of a name and a mascot. And they chose the Colonels because of the fact that it was a place where Vermont soldiers, before they left for the war, would come gather and train. That was the intent, to try to honor the Union soldiers in the Civil War. But by 1970, it had morphed slowly into a Southern Colonel. The idea was we are here in Southern Vermont, and as a result, we would be the pride of the South. And I think they really embraced that pride of the South. And then as a result of that, suddenly the Colonel started looking more like a Southern plantation owner, sort of Colonel Sanders. But then it went a step farther, and suddenly it was like, well, you know, the Southern Colonel would probably wave the Confederate flag. So by 1990, things had gotten to a point where people in town were going like, this might not be what was intended in 1950, and this might not be what is appropriate now in this day and age. I mean, not that it ever was, but the idea was. Suddenly, what had started out as something honoring Union soldiers now was the exact opposite. But it's been interesting because of the fact that there are people who really still hold on to the Union soldier roots and feel like just because it morphed into something doesn't mean that it can't come back to what it was. But there are other people who feel like, well, at this point, unfortunately, too many people have seen it or see it for its more more recent incarnation. And Brattleboro has, Union High School now has 15% of its student body who are of color. And I think the feeling amongst the majority of the school board was, yes, we understand that the history was honoring the Union soldiers, but for a lot of the students today, it really is perceived as sort of out of touch in terms of where we want to be in terms of inclusive. And so they made the vote to change it to the Bears, which was a student chosen mascot. The principal was really trying to bring about a little bit of closure on this to say that for those of you who graduated as a colonel and remember it as a Union soldier, you'll always have that. And at the same time, for those students now and in the future, they will be able to embrace a symbol that they feel fully represents all of them. So I think the hope is that they can move forward and this won't be something. I think the other reason, to be honest with you, I think they decided to move on was they've been talking about this now for almost 25 years. And I think the feeling was, how long are we going to talk about it and when are we going to start to move forward?
Wow, interesting. I didn't realize the extent of all that background. That's fascinating. And it's obviously, this is a discussion that's not limited just to Brattleboro either. In Rutland, we saw back and forth between Raiders and Ravens and back to Raiders again, or I'm not sure where it's landed up now. But anyway, we have a few minutes left. And Chris, I wanted to get back to you here and have you tell us a little bit about a story you covered, I think, up in Dover earlier this week, a drag queen show. All of a sudden, these have become super controversial around the country, along with banning books and whatnot. How was that show, and was it controversial in any way? Were there? I trust there were no people holding signs or placards outside and going, "What are these people doing here?"
No, but I will say I asked if they wanted to do a preview story ahead of time, and they declined. It was actually a private event, and my partner was invited to it, and I was invited to cover it. And talking to the person who booked the event, the owner of the general store, first of all, it was too small to invite the public at large into the space. Not all the people came, and it was still pretty packed. But the reason, one of the reasons she wanted to do it was because she felt like all that's been happening politically lately has been an attack on her family. She grew up in a household with two fathers, and drag queens were always part of the mix. They, you know, they would have cookie baking parties and other types of celebrations. And so she grew up with that, and she wanted to, you know, have that kind of thing be introduced to other people in the community who haven't been exposed to it. And it was a really moving event. I had my dog there, Lemon. She's a little Yorkie, and she got a lot of attention there too. And the performers were from up north. Two of them were from up north. The other one was from Windham, which is in our county of Windham County. And yeah, they're just from this group called Drag Story Hour, and they're based all over the country, and they perform all over.
I will say, Andrew, that he got his dog Lemon in onto the program, so I'm impressed.
Oh, wow, very good.
Lemon is a personality over here in Windham County, by the way.
Well, great. Well, so much more to talk about here, but Clock on the Wall says it's time to go here. So I just wanted to say thanks again to Kevin O'Connor, who reports and writes for VT Digger. Chris Mays is a reporter and writer with Vermont News and Media, which includes the Brattleboro Reformer, Manchester Journal, and Bennington Banner. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for making the time to be with us today and bring us up to speed on what's going on over in Windham County on the other side of the mountain there. Great to hear from you both. Thank you very much. And everybody who's watching, you can be sure you really need to follow their stories in both those publications to keep up with what's going on over there. So meanwhile, thanks again for being with us. Hope you all have a great day, and we'll see you again the next time. Take care.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.